This is a WTF podcast experience.
I was that guy. I was the bottleneck in my own business because everything had to come through me. I was the smartest person in the business, and I thought that was my role. I really did. And it was only later on that I realized that my role was actually to make people around me smarter.
Welcome to Taming the Ferrets, New Zealand's most awarding business podcast.
Kia ora, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Taming the Ferrets. A collection of ferrets is called a business, and we bring the leading entrepreneurs, leaders, and inspirational figures from the Bay of Plenty to your ears. Our goal is to inform, educate, motivate, and inspire. My name's Freddie Bennett, entrepreneur, author, world record holder, and wannabe podcast host. Today, everyone, we have got a real treat for you. We have Robin Olivier, franchise owner of Action Coach. Robin, welcome to Taming the Ferrets.
Thanks, Freddie. It's great to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here at the Shared Workspace in Tauranga in the WTF Production Studios. I hope you like what we've done with the place. No expense was spared with the plastic plants and the paper cups.
That's amazing. Best space I've seen.
Amazing. Well, best space of the day. And we are New Zealand's most awarding business podcast, which you will find out later in the show, Robin. But first of all, for anyone that isn't aware of you and what you do, tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm entrepreneur at heart. From an early age, I knew I was going to have my own business. And my business currently is the fifth business that I've started. Mm-hmm. My first one in New Zealand. So recently moved over about 3 years ago. And moved over from South Africa, originally from Cape Town. Love Cape Town. It's a beautiful city, but I love New Zealand more. This is Definitely. Home. And Tauranga in particular is just amazing. But Cape Town formed me, who I am, my identity, created opportunity, created a business that ended up being reasonably successful by most standards.
Perfect. And now when you say when you were younger and you always had that entrepreneurial leaning as such, what gave you that impression? Were you setting up mini businesses? Did you always think that having a, dare I say, a proper job wasn't for you?
No, it wasn't so much that. You know, I grew up in a single parent household, and so there wasn't luxury growing up in the house. Yeah, we always had a roof over our head and food on the table, and that was great, but no luxuries. And somehow my mother ended up getting me into a sort of elite school in Cape Town, and so I got to see how the other half lived, and I kind of liked what I saw. That was what drove me. I wanted to have some of that, and so I knew that I needed to do that myself. I couldn't rely on somebody else to make me successful. I had to do it myself.
I love that. I think that's a key lesson, and we've come straight in this episode throwing in the value grenades. But I think there's so many people, especially at the moment, that think, if I do a course, if I read a book, if I watch a YouTube video, that's what's going to make me successful. But I think you're totally right. It is down to ourselves, and sometimes there's no easy way.
No, there isn't. And looking back, it was an incredible journey, but it wasn't an easy journey. I had to. Yeah, there were a lot of lessons and pitfalls along the way, which is really what's led me to doing what I'm doing today, is to help other business owners navigate through those pitfalls and maybe make that journey a little bit smoother than what it would be if they were just trying to do it on their own.
Absolutely. I think it's key to any support we can give people in the guidance, and helping others to learn from our own past experiences is totally invaluable. And I'd love to go back, if we may, to some of those early businesses. And you mentioned in South Africa the four businesses that you had, or at least the couple that you set up in South Africa, and then that became successful. Mm-hmm. What was that journey like? Were there any particular pitfalls that you mentioned, or lessons that you got out of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first business I set up with a colleague. We were working at another company together, and we decided we could do it better. And then we left, And then we figured out that our values were not aligned. But we were 50-50 partners. And so we came to a, what they call a Mexican standoff. Neither of us was prepared to budge. So eventually I left. So that was a big lesson for me, is value alignment and choose your partners carefully. The second business that I started was a bit of a, it was a complete failure, actually. Stellar failure. Because
why was that?
Well, it was a failure in my eyes because I put everything I had into it, and I borrowed some money from my parents as well. And like I mentioned, they didn't have a lot of that. So, you know, I had everything on the line. That was a beer business, importing beer, which I figured, well, if there's one thing I know more about than IT, it was beer, right?
Yeah.
What could go wrong? So that didn't work out, and I lost everything. I literally had the banks calling me to say, hey, are we coming around to pick up the keys, or, you know?
Wow.
And
can I just ask them a bit, how does that feel, getting that call? Because we see so much on social media about, you know, embrace failure, don't be scared of failure. Everyone's telling us to take the, you know, take the leap, take the risk and everything else. So then when you do that, and you're in that situation where you've got the bank calling you up, I mean, what went through your mind?
Yeah, it. I'm extremely competitive. I've competed at various levels in different sports, and failure has never been something that I've embraced. And I don't think that is something that should be embraced. It is a lesson, 100%, and it's something that should be learned from, and it did. I did. In fact, I don't think my next business would have been the success that it was had I not had that failure. However, it's not something you go seeking, right? How did I feel? Being the competitive person that I am, it hit me really, really hard. However, in that moment, my wife was 6 months pregnant.
Wow.
The banks wanting to take the house away. I had to pick myself up, put on my pants, my big boy pants, and say, right, so what am I going to control from here? And so I started another business, one that I knew would be easier to succeed in than what I was trying to do. So the lesson for me there was fail, but fail fast.
Yeah.
You know, pick up very quickly whether it is try things. 100%. I love it. Innovation, you know, all of those good things. But if you see it's not going the way it's supposed to, pull the plug fast. So fail, but fail fast, and then take the lessons from that and apply that to the next thing that you do.
Definitely. I think that's so important, because then I always say in these episodes, it's about the guest, not about me. But I like to drop in a few clues from my past along the way. And you know, I've been in that position as well, with a business failing. And it's a difficult place to be when you're telling yourself, don't give up, you know, and we're taught to carry on. I think especially if we're competitive in nature, we don't want to throw in the towel or to quit or say, you know what, this isn't working, it's time to cut my losses and focus my energy elsewhere. But as you say, sometimes that is the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, quitting is never easy. Walking away from something that you truly believe was the right thing to do is never easy, but necessary. And it's okay. It's okay to fail, you know. Don't take it too seriously, because there's no, and I honestly believe this, there's no hole deep enough that you can't get out of.
I love that. And I think many people have been in this position sometimes, when it might be business, it might be relationships, it might be family, school or wherever, and you just think it's hopeless. It's never going to get better from this. But in my own work, I encourage people to think in a month, 12 months, 10 years time, it can be better, because we simply have to find a way to make it work.
Yeah. You know, that's what I do now, is I 100% I help people dream, and from the dream we plan, and then from there we act. And so it's always it's great to be future focused because that is what draws us along.
Yeah.
But it's also important to, you know, still be aware of what's happening right now and in the present. You
definitely.
Know? Yeah. No. So I always say, you know, 15% in the future and 85% in the 75% in the present, 10% the past.
Yeah, exactly. There's 2 days we can't control. I say you can't control tomorrow and you can't control yesterday, but you can control today. And with the, so we had the couple of businesses, and then as you kept trying the businesses and you kept learning, then when did it all start to come together? When did you think, right, I'm onto something now? And you could see things were starting to work.
From the get-go, when I decided that this is what I needed to do, right? My wife was 6 months pregnant. I needed to get an income as quickly as possible. I needed to make enough money to pay back the money that I borrowed. These were my drivers. And so failure never actually, even though I'd just come off of a stellar failure, failure never entered my thinking when we started the next business, which was called DigiCape, which was an Apple IT business. And I think it was, I don't know, you know, ignorance or bravado, but it was literally failure was not an option. And it was, so let me tell you a little bit about that first month, right? So when I saw the writing on the wall for the failing business, I contacted two mates of mine that I'd worked with before. I said, are you interested in leaving there and starting something new? And they said, yeah, great. Started the business. We had $500 between the three of us, which we spent that morning. So by the end of day one, we had $0 to our name. That was it.
Yeah. Right?
That, there was, nobody had any more money. But we all three took a salary at the end of that first month.
Really?
Which is unusual, I think, for a startup business.
A lot of people get in that mindset, which I struggle with myself as well, about we're never going to make money for the first couple of years. We're going to be in debt. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. And I believe there is hard work involved, but it doesn't always have to be a long, painful slog. I think if you're doing if you find the right market at the right time and you can help people in the right way, there's no rules saying you're not allowed to make money after month one or month six or month or year one.
Yeah, and you know, the old adage that people deal with people is 100% true. So, you know, we just decided right from the get-go to be very people-centric and very customer-centric. And we'd always been like that in our previous positions that we had in different businesses. And so we very quickly got a loyal following in our, for our business and established good relationships or rekindled good relationships that we had previously. And that fallback was really key to the success of that business because it allowed us, it gave us the platform from which to launch and almost go straight into success mode.
Definitely. It's a key moment. If I think by focusing on the people is such an important thing because so many, especially with, I think in 2022, everyone's focusing on a new platform or a new app or a new cryptocurrency or an NFT or something else. And they forget that that people element and relationships, I believe. And I think it's something we see here in Tauranga and the Bay of Plenty. Relationships are so important. And as I always think it's quite ironic, we've got a podcast about Tauranga presented by an Englishman speaking to a South African. But one of the things that first struck me here was everyone said, power of relationships, getting to know people, building your network, all these things. And these things don't cost any money. I think that for anyone listening, saying how, you know, whether they've lived here all their life or whether they've just arrived here, whether they live somewhere totally different, it's about meeting people and building those long-term relationships.
Yeah, exactly right. And it took me a long time in my own business to learn some of these lessons. But, you know, if you just respect people, you treat them with the respect, you genuinely interested in, you know, what's important to them, what are their challenges and how you can help overcome that, the relationships strengthen very quickly, right? And that is what Tauranga is about. It's not about where you're from or what your background is. It's, you know, are you somebody that I would be happy to connect with and keep connecting with?
Definitely. And I think it's the old adage that it doesn't say that networks or your network is your net worth. And I think we could all build a huge net worth just through meeting people, through helping people. And I'd love to come on to this in your current role as well. But in terms of how to give more and how to give more value to people rather than just going out there thinking, what can I gain from this relationship and everything else? We will come to that. I want to just to ask a couple more questions on DigiCape. Were there moments in the start when you were worried after say the previous failures, when you, I guess like a new relationship, isn't it? If previous relationships haven't worked out, you're sometimes a bit tentative when you go into the next one. In those early days, were there, you know, the sleepless nights thinking, is this going to work? Or were you always confident from the start that, you know, this is it and this is how it's going to be?
There were definitely sleepless nights, lots of sleepless nights, actually. But, you know, the one thing, one of the concerns was, this was in 99. Steve Jobs had just gone back to Apple a couple of years previously, but what I didn't realize was how tenuous Apple was. You know, there was an article I read that they were literally like 90 days from shutting their doors. And I was clueless to that, right? But the rumors started coming on, and a lot of people advised me to not get involved with Apple. But I had such a passion for not just the products, but for the brand as well, and the ethos of the brand, you know, challenging the status quo. We firmly believe in what we do, and what we do is really good. You know, those are the things that really resonated with me. So my passion for the brand and for the products was really strong and carried me through that. And I think that was really important, because if I was constantly questioning, I'd probably be pulled from pillar to post. But while it was a niggle in the back of my mind and maybe a few sleepless nights, I was very steady on staying on that path. And what a great journey that was, because we were right there as Apple started booming. You know, the iPod came out, the iMac came out first, and then the iPod, and that was a game changer. And the passion just, you know, really showed through.
Definitely. I think it's a key example as well of following a passion, and I wouldn't say a gut feeling, because I know it isn't that, but it's following, almost following your heart when people are saying, and I'm older than I look, so I do remember those days as well, in terms of people saying that Apple was kind of a fringe thing or a niche thing, and our younger listeners wouldn't be able to imagine that, looking at, you know, the trillion-dollar company it is today. But, yeah, for a long time, it was all IBM, Dell, PCs, everything else. And if you had something Apple, you were looked upon as a bit of an outcast. But if you have that belief in a product and in a business and in a leader as well, in Steve Jobs, I think it is important to stay the course and not be distracted by things around.
Yeah, and you know, I also know something about myself is that I do like to be constantly stimulated by what I do. So I needed constant change, and Apple provided that. And you know, the idea of doing anything else just did not tickle my fancies at all. And I think in order to be successful, to be great at something, you really got to believe in it. Right. Really got to, it doesn't have to necessarily be like a burning passion, but you have to believe that it is the right thing. And that's how you help people. If you believe in what it is that you're providing or selling, that belief is what's going to drive the success. And if you don't, how do you succeed in that? How do you be successful at something that you don't believe in, that you have no passion for, and quite honestly, you probably don't enjoy doing?
Definitely. And I think that's a topic that I could certainly talk about all day. I'll tell you what, well, let's jump onto that. My final question on this part of your life is, yeah, how did you go from building that this business was rapidly growing in a rapidly growing market with a rapidly growing, you know, company with Apple? How did you go from there to landing here in New Zealand?
Well, I think Just to contextualize a little bit, you know, what did that company look like at the end when I exited that business? It's still going, but I've exited completely. So we took that business with myself and two mates, spending the $500 on the first day, which was the only money ever put into that business, by the way. Never again. It was completely self-funded from day one after the $500 was spent. And we grew that business to six branches across three cities and at one point employed over 100 people. I say at one point because at the end, we actually got that down to about 86 people, but grew our revenue by 40% and probably doubled our net profit. While that was about efficiencies, and that was the lessons that I was working on towards the end is how can we improve this? And a lot of it came down to the people.
And so we
fostered a lot of trust with the team. And I say we, myself and the management team. And so the people became really, really important. And and so the more I showed that I trusted them, they trusted me. The more I showed I cared for them, they cared for me. And that was really, really important lesson for me because I became, you know, before I was an employer paying salaries and suddenly I was the caretaker of people's lives and their families and their kids and everything else. And suddenly that became really important to me. And so when I came to New Zealand, my wife's a Kiwi and so it was coming home to New Zealand, really. It was like, what do I do now? And I still wanted to help people because I've become so people-centric. I really enjoyed helping people. So I wanted to do something where I could make a difference in people's lives. And business coaching was it, right? So going back one step further, back in Cape Town, the local government there asked for successful entrepreneurs, especially in the IT space, to help mentor startups because they wanted to be the Silicon Valley of South Africa, or maybe even Africa for that matter. And so I put up my hand and what a fantastic journey. I did that for 8 years. I helped startups get through that initial phase. And I wanted to keep doing that. I wanted to keep helping people in that way. And that's when I decided that I wanted to do business coaching.
Amazing. And so did you, so you come home, as you say, to New Zealand, and then was it a case of, because I think, I believe with Action Coach, it's you're the franchise owner, is that correct?
Yeah.
I was going to say, what was it about Action Coach that appealed to you, or did they find you?
So remember when I started that business, the DigiCape business, I was just a techie, right? Yeah. No business background or, I mean, I dabbled in businesses, but I didn't study business or have a degree or an MBA or anything. So everything that I learned, I grew as the business grew. I grew personally, my personal growth. And also the experience of things that I tried that didn't work and then tried things that did work and, well, that's obviously what I needed to do. I wish I knew that in the first place. And so when I started researching business coaching organizations, I came across Action Coach. And when I started diving a little deeper into what it is they do, what are the systems, what is the philosophy and the methodologies, it all really aligned with my experience too. To the point where I was like, this is definitely where I need to be. This is what I need to do. And then I'll also say that there were quite a few things and I was like, I wish I knew that when I had my business. I could have done it better. I could have done it faster. But overall, it was the alignment of what it is that Action Coach does and my own experience that really drew me into Action Coach.
Amazing. And what kind of businesses do you help now? Is it people that have literally got an idea? Is it people who have got established businesses? How does it all work?
So my drive is to help business owners, right? That's my primary objective. So I'm a generalist. I will help anybody that needs to be helped. That is the bottom line. Because I've been through that experience of right up to employing 100 people and the complexity that creates, which is huge.
Sure.
you know, right through the line from startup through to that phase, I've got something that I can draw on from experience, not just theory or a tool or something like that. And that's where I want to make a difference. So whether it's a startup or whether it's, you know, a multinational organization or an enterprise, I've got something that I can contribute in that space. And that's what, you know, so for me, primarily, it's businesses in the Bay. That's my passion.
Definitely. Well, I think that's certainly the passion here as well on Taming the Ferrets. And probably an impossible question to answer, I imagine. But when one of the things that I found when I first arrived here, I mean, I came into New Zealand. I hadn't even heard of Tauranga before coming here. You know, I arrived here and I was blown away by the energy, the amount of businesses that were here, the amount of growth that we literally see around us in this city every day. Do you feel, I hear the impossible part of the question, is there a common challenge faced by business owners here at the moment? Or is there something that you keep hearing again and again when you're having these conversations?
Probably the biggest concerning challenge, and this is something I really want to draw a lot of attention to with everybody that I speak to, is business owners tend to be too reactive. There's not enough of proactive action being taken by business owners in. I'm sorry to say, but the Bay of Plenty is my context because I haven't dealt with other business owners. But in my experience with Bay of Plenty business owners, is get out there and you know, put a plan in place, because too often I'm hearing, well, you know, my inquiries have slowed down. Well, what are you going to do about it? Get out there and get more inquiries if your inquiries are slowing down. But have a plan. Do you know, work to a plan. See what works, what doesn't, and then get out there and do it, because it's either do it or don't do it. But there's nothing in between. And so, yeah, the reactivity is the biggest concern for me, especially with what we see coming now with, you know, inflation and price increases and skills shortages and everything else that is thrown at us globally, not just in here in the Bay, but globally. Yeah. These problems are going to have a big impact. And because New Zealand is such a small market, the impact is almost immediate. Whereas other countries with large markets and populations might have a longer tail. Here in New Zealand, it's going to hit us quick.
That's very true. And I mean, are you concerned about some businesses here? Do you think there's a risk that that many businesses here are the blockbuster video in the time that Netflix is growing, for example?
It's difficult to say. It's difficult to say. I mean, Tauranga is booming, and I think Tauranga will continue to boom, but I do think there's going to be some consolidation, not necessarily industry consolidation, but within industries. I do see there's quite a lot of saturation in some areas. And so as the belt tightens, so some businesses are going to fall by the wayside, and the good ones, the ones that are established, the ones that are proactive and have solid plans in place, are the ones that will survive, and the others are going to fall away.
I think, as you say, it's sometimes easy as a business owner to stay reactive and to blame the market or the economy or blame inflation or blame Omicron or anything else. But I think Warren Buffett is a big fan of this. It's possible to be successful in any market, no matter who. This is something I personally believe. It doesn't matter who's in charge of the government. It doesn't matter, you know, things make it more difficult, like COVID, but there's always a way, I think. And as you've shown with your past businesses as well, it's about failing fast, trying things, but taking action and then taking that proactive action. And I'm a big believer of, if we could be doing something and learning from it, it's better than being sat in your office and sat in your business and looking out the window and saying, why aren't these customers coming through my door?
Yeah. Back in the, well, I think as recently as in 1980, I think they eventually stopped this practice, but, what's happening at the moment reminds me of like the coal mining days where you had methane gas. Mm. And so they had uncertain working environments. They had dangers that they couldn't see, but they knew was around, but not necessarily affecting them directly. So they took a canary in with them. And the canary was there as an early warning signal to say, listen, it's time to change direction. Like, stop going that way and start going that way. And I think too often for a lot of businesses that I come across, the canary is the bank account. It's the bank, you know, it's the bank balance. But unfortunately, that's too late. So I would love to encourage business owners to actually start putting canaries in place in the business where they get an early warning signal that something is changing and that they need to change something too in response. You know, things like number of inquiries, actually track it. Know when the number of inquiries are going down, not just, you know, it feels like it, but actually look at the numbers and say, right, you know, we are 20% down on what we got last month. We need to change something. We need to make more calls, more appointments, more visits, whatever that is, but respond early, because the knock-on effect is eventually going to come back to your bank account. If the bank account is your canary, you know, the methane gas is already out.
Definitely. And I've just thought of the, if everyone can also subscribe to the spin-off podcast called Taming the Canaries. So we've got ferrets, we've got canaries. So we'll have the whole zoo by the end of the year, which is always good. And I wanted to change focus slightly, if we may, and think about the, I was going to say that the more junior business owner, but the business owner who's maybe earlier on their entrepreneurial journey, because certainly what I see now, and this has been a shift in the last, you know, 20 years or so. Again, in 1999, 2000, it was always the 80s and the 90s still, where, you know, being an investment banker was cool, being a trader was cool, and that, you know, that whole sort of the Wall Street scene and everything else, people wanted the high-paying, hardcore jobs and the Ferraris and everything else. Now I believe it's flipped, where entrepreneurship is seen as the cool thing to be. And there's a lot of people out there that are saying, you know, they're seeing all the people on social media and they say, I want to be a business owner, I want to be an entrepreneur, because they think it's all, you know, Lamborghinis and working from a beach with a laptop and everything else. But I also believe a lot of people in real life, because what we do here on Taming the Ferrets is make it relevant for people, I think in real life, there's a lot of confusion out there, because we are, well, I'd love to know your view. Do you feel that we're bombarded by all these different messages with people saying start a business and follow a passion, or then other people are saying don't follow your passion, follow the money, or don't follow the money, go and do something that's already working? There's so many conflicting messages there. What's your view on that, and how do we try and give clarity to people?
Well, I think firstly, let me just say that I do believe the future is in entrepreneurship. I think globally, this is a driver. It's really important, because otherwise, you know, corporations will control everything. But what we do know is that it's the startups and the smaller businesses that create more employment across the board. And so what we want to do is to see those small businesses succeed so that we can create more jobs. But I agree with you. I think what happens is that some people chase the lifestyle, and they chase the lifestyle without understanding the sacrifice and the hard work that it takes to get that lifestyle. And people get hurt along the way. And as they get hurt, they change their decision making. They allow their fears and their beliefs to infiltrate their decision making. And so they lose the bravado and the fearlessness that you start out with. That kind of gets chipped away along the way. And I'd love to see that just keep going, but be realistic. You know, it takes time. It's not, those huge overnight successes you hear about, because they are so rare that it spreads like wildfire when it happens.
I think that's it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it's certainly something that I've seen in the past. And if I'm honest, I'm probably guilty of in the past as well, that people have that, you know, that mission, that passion, that desire of what they want to achieve. They start the business in, you know, in this flurry of excitement because it's all something new and shiny. But then you do take a few hits on the way and you make some mistakes and you might have some setbacks. And then all of a sudden they start thinking, Bitcoin, maybe I should be doing some Bitcoin now. Or they think, oh no, what I need to be doing actually is NFTs or YouTubing's a few, and they have the again with shiny object syndrome. You get drawn away from your path by these short term fixes because you start thinking things aren't going the way I wanted them to go. I'd need some short term cash, and almost they start to make more short term decisions and but damage their long term strategy. Is that something that you see?
Yeah, very much so. You know, especially with the millennials, the younger business owners, it's about instant wins, instant gratification. Mm. But as I said before, it's a long game. You know, this is a 5-day game. It's not a T20. And so, you know, be prepared for it. Be ready for it too. Mm. Be prepared and ready, which is not necessarily the same thing. Put in the hard yards. Instant gratification is great, and go for it if you have that belief. But long-term success comes from a long-term strategy and long-term planning.
Sure. No, I totally agree. Do you think that anyone can be an entrepreneur? Or does it take a certain, you know, are there some people that just aren't cut out for it?
I think anybody can be an entrepreneur. I really do. But I think it's got to be realistic entrepreneurship. Mm. You know, so take the time to understand your strengths and your weaknesses. Mm. Build on those strengths and bring in people that can strengthen your weaknesses. And so, you know, be self-aware, be self-critical, and strengthen the areas that are weaker. Because again, too often what I see is business owners trying to be everything in their business, which is, you know, and I'm talking from experience here because I was that guy. I was the bottleneck in my own business because everything had to come through me. I was the smartest person in the business, and I thought that was my role. I really did. And it was only later on that I realized that my role was actually to make people around me smarter and certainly look out for people that are smarter than me. And I think that was Richard Branson's strategy for Virgin. And I stand by that 150%. So be realistic, be self-aware, strengthen your strengths and support your weaknesses by bringing in people that are strong in those areas.
I think that's so key. And I speak to, I know a lot of business owners, and they're doing 80, 100-hour week. You know, we talk about taming the ferrets on this podcast. Their ferrets are out of control because they're never seeing their family. They're not sleeping properly. Their diet is terrible. They're stressed in their business. They're too busy running their business to change their business. But when you say to them, you know, outsource some of this, bring in some other people to help, they always say something like, no one knows it like I do, or no one can do this as well as I do. And I think it's key that they also have a duty, I believe, to try and impart their skills on other people as well. But as I said, is that a challenge that you come across? Or people say, I'm too caught up running my business to actually make these changes?
It's definitely a cultural mentality that we have here in New Zealand, where people believe, you know, if something's not working, you just work harder. And it's not necessarily the solution. There's also a lot of assumption. So, you know, there aren't skilled people out there. I can't afford to employ someone, you know, and I often have that conversation. I say, well, can you afford not to? Yeah. Because the way you're going, you know, in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be putting you 6 feet under. And so there's a lot of assumption and some cultural aspects to, you know, the bloke mentality. If it's not working, work harder. Just keep going. And it's quite sad to see, because I believe that true success is working less, not working more.
I love that. And that is a trap that I've fallen into in the past as well, because I used to be in the corporate world, and it was that whole that badge of honour that you've, I've banked an 80-hour week this week. I've worked until 3 o'clock in the morning this week. And we, I think it's quite an old-fashioned belief that we don't have to have in a digital age, that you need to, your income is directly correlated to the number of hours that you're there at your desk, or, you know, or toiling away or doing something else. There is a way to work smarter and to make more money, but it almost feels like it's cheating sometimes. And people say to me, like, it's, I need to suffer for this business growth. And it doesn't have to be that way, surely.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, people think you're lazy or you're showboating because, you know, you're off fishing while everyone else is working or surfing or whatever it might be. But why not? You know, absolutely, why not? And I was very much the same. You know, I was working 60, 80-hour weeks. I was missing my kids' sports days and prize givings. And, you know, I sacrificed a lot. And, I felt so good. I actually didn't, right? Mm. I thought I was doing the right thing because the busier I am, the more successful I am. And it was only in the latter part of my DigiCape journey that I actually started to understand that I didn't have to do that, and that I could balance it out, and that there was a way of doing it, and how awesome it was when I got it right, that I could take my family on holidays. I could take an afternoon off and go play golf or surf or whatever it was that I wanted to do. Society puts guilt on us, and we've taken that on, and so it infiltrates our belief system. But I believe it's a belief system that can and should be changed.
But do you think, though, with that, that's a belief that I try and do in all my businesses with varying degrees of success sometimes. I think a lot of people say that, and they say, yes, I am going to create that lifestyle where I can be on the golf course, I can be on the boat or with the family. But first, I just need to give it 5 more years. I just need to hit this revenue target. I just need to scale by this amount. Do you think is it an outcome that people have to aim for? Or is it a lifestyle and a way of working and a way of living that people can have right from the start of their business?
No, I think there's going to be periods where it's going to take, you know, the hard graft to get everything in place. But I think that it should be part of, like, from the start, it should be part of the plan is to get to that point. It also gives you something to aim for, which is really important in business, because that draws us, you know, it keeps us focused, and we know it gives us purpose. It's why we are doing this, is so that we could have that lifestyle when the right time comes. But be aware, you know, that there's going to be hard work and sacrifice along the way, and be ready for that too.
Definitely. And speaking of purpose, one area I wanted to touch on, we've talked about Apple, we've talked about Steve Jobs, and I know I'm going to murder this quote now, so apologies to Steve, wherever you may be these days. But you know, one of the famous Steve Jobs quotes was something on the lines of, if you wake up too many mornings in a row and you look in the mirror and you think, I'm not happy with my life, then you have to change it. Is that a quote that you believe in and that you feel that people should be living?
I'm a huge proponent of change. Identify the things that are important. Identify the things that you love to do. Do the things that you love to do. And if you spend too much time doing things that you don't love to do, bring in the changes that you need. We spend, let's say, on an 8-hour day or a 40-hour week, we're spending more time in the workplace than we do at home. Why not enjoy what you do? And as I said before, the chance of being great or successful is far greater if you love what you do than if you don't. So I couldn't think of anything worse, anything more sad. Can I say sadder?
Yeah.
Sadder than, you know, somebody getting up Monday to Friday, day after day, and going and doing something that they really don't enjoy doing. That kills me, the thought of doing something like that.
I know. And you know what? I was there as well for a number of years. And as I may have said on previous episodes, I had the job, but I had the Porsche and I had the watch and the holidays in the Maldives. I hated my life and I was miserable. But I told myself a story. If you want these things in your life, the shiny things, then you have to make the 60-hour sacrifice every week. But for me, I finally realised that, that life's too short for that. And I thought I might as well, even if I fail doing something for myself, at least I'm failing doing what I love rather than being mildly successful at doing something I hate.
Life is too short, eh?
Yeah.
But well done for doing that. I think that's great. That realisation in the time that it came will, I do believe, it'll change the path and put you on in a different direction, and you're going to love that journey.
No, absolutely. It's all about loving the journey, definitely. And that's a brilliant place to start wrapping things up. We do have a mystery question for you though, Robin. I haven't told. So a tradition here on Taming the Ferrets is that the previous guest has to write in the question book a question for the next guest.
Oh.
So you will get a chance to write in this book and give a question to the next guest. And I know who the next guest is, so you've got a great opportunity. So the previous guest wrote a question for you, and I haven't seen this question myself either. So the this was from our wonderful Melanie, who was on the show last time, and she says to you, what is the one pivoting moment in your life that got you to this very point?
100%. That's an easy one. Meeting my wife. Funny story. She was traveling around the world. London was her base of operations, and she was making money, travel. Go back to London, make some more money, travel. And she was traveling with a friend, and they were deciding where to go. The friend wanted to go to Africa. She wanted to go to India. So they did rock, paper, scissors and ended up in Africa, where I met her, and she stayed for 25 years. And so, you know, one of the biggest blessings in my life, not just my family and my kids, but also the opportunity of being able to call New Zealand home. And that's purely because I happened to have the good fortune of bumping into her in a pub in Cape Town.
Wow. That's an amazing story. I love that. And all those kinds of things where if that game of rock, paper, scissors hadn't, hadn't gone a certain way, and it's one of those real sliding doors moments, but what a wonderful pivotal moment. I think if you're, as we've said, Robert, if you're loving your life and you're loving what you do, and we're both loving being here in Tauranga in the Bay of Plenty, then everything, I'm sure, is going to be great in the future. Robin, it's been great having you on the show. If people want to find out more about you and your business, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, you can either jump on my website. It's robinolivia.actioncoach.com, or find me on LinkedIn. I'm there, and I'd love to hear from everyone. And thanks so much for having me. This has been really great chatting to you and sharing this journey that we've been on. And I say we. It's been great. Thank you.
No, definitely. Well, it's perfect. And I think we've definitely successfully tamed the ferrets for another week. They're all back in their boxes now. And Robert, it's been an absolute pleasure. We'd love to have you back on the show in a few months' time. I think we've got so many things to talk about. But I'd encourage everyone listening to get in touch with you. Let's all work together, do more of what we love, and help make this wonderful Bay of Plenty even more successful.
Love it. Let's do it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Like what you hear? Don't forget to follow us on social media at Taming the Ferrets and to give us 5 stars on your podcast provider. We're New Zealand's best kept secret, but don't be afraid of sharing us with the world. This has been a WTF experience. Discover more of your favourite shows and learn how to launch your very own podcast at wtfproductions.nz.